It's been a while since we had our shir. So let's just recap real quick what we were discussing. So we're talking here, Achav is just finished having a war with Aram. And he was fighting Ben-Hadad. And he was told by the Navi to kill out Aram, to kill out everybody completely. However, he left Ben-Hadad. He didn't kill Ben-Hadad. And apparently that was going against the Nevuah that the Navi gave him. Not only did he not kill Ben-Hadad, but he called him my brother. He's my brother. So right away they tried to take advantage of that and to establish that they're in fact brothers, whatever that means. And that's why he didn't kill him. So now this Navi who gave the Nevuah to Achav is going to go ahead and rebuke him. But how is he going to rebuke him? In a way of a story. So let's see. So he goes over to this random person. He says, hit me. Go ahead. Knock me out. What does the ish do? He says, what do you mean? I'm not going to hit a Navi. Right? That's the wrong thing to do. So, now apparently this is the wrong thing to do, even though you're not supposed to hit a Navi. But the Radak points out that, first of all, how do you know that he's a Navi? Right, he didn't give him any sign. Typically a Navi, when he tells you a Nevuah, he gives you a sign. I'm giving you a sign that I'm a Navi because, you know, whatever, a miracle or some kind of other sign. However, the Radak points out that if the Navi is Muchzak, if he is established to be a Navi already, then we don't ask any questions, we don't wait for a sign, because we already know that he's an unbelievable Navi, he's a real Navi, real prophet, and therefore he doesn't have to give a sign. So now this is very similar to the story of Shaul. Shaul also made the same mistake when he had mercy over Agag. He didn't kill Agag. And it says, Chemla Rishayim Achzarius. Being merciful towards evil people is cruelty. Because once you're merciful towards evil people, that will lead to these evil people developing some kind of army, some kind of plan, some kind of plot to kill out the Jewish people, like Haman did, the great-great-grandson of Agag. And it almost led to the complete annihilation of the Jewish people. That's what happens when you're merciful towards Rishayim. And now the reason why this person who refused to hit the Navi we'll see what happened then. Let's see the next pasuk. V'emar le'yanash lo shamata b'kol Hashem, hincha ho'elich me'iti, v'hikcha ha'ariyeh. So he says, "Oh, because you didn't listen to me, because of that, once you leave me, the a lion will attack you and kill you, and that is a punishment for not listening to the Navi. Anytime you don't listen to a Navi, your punishment is death." Like it says, "Anoichi edrosh meitai." I will go ahead and demand it from him personally. That's Hashem speaking.
Wasn't the Navi Yonah?
Oh no, the Radak says that the name of the Navi was Michiel.
I'm not sure.
I don't know, could be there's another pshat, but the Radak says that his name was Michiel. So what does this Navi do? Vayimtza isha acher, vayomer akeni na. He turns to another person, and he tells them, "Hit me, go ahead." Ve'akeo ish hake ufatzoya. He didn't just give him like a light smack, right? He let it loose. He really smacked him until he was literally bleeding. He beat him up.
Wait a minute. What did he say? Hit me. Now, what does that mean? Knock me out? Kick me? Or just give me a whack? So I know I did something wrong. I mean, How is he supposed to know how what he means?
You're right.
There's different ways of hitting a person.
Playing cards.
Right.
They're paying 21, he said.
Right. Well, apparently he understood that he actually meant, you know, a real beating.
So he was.
That's just like a little.
He didn't hit him once. He hit him until he fell mm-hmm. down and was bleeding.
Yeah. 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 Now this was important. Why? Because the fact that the Navi bled was a kapara, was an atonement to the Jewish people. Atonement to the Jewish people because he bled. Therefore, the Jewish people didn't suffer the consequences of Achav not listening to the Nevuah. And that's why next time they went to war, well, we're going to see later on, next time they went to war, none of them died. They actually came out victorious. Again, we'll see. We'll see later. But this, the fact that the Navi was hurt, was bleeding, that was a kapara for the Jewish people. They didn't die in the Melchama of Ramos Gilad. They were supposed to die, but because the Navi got hurt, that was instead of it. So now, what the Navi is going to do is he's going to go ahead, appear to Achav, and tell him a story, hoping Achav on his own will realize who's at fault with the story, and he's going to, so to speak, sign his own decree. He's going to realize that Achav is going to realize that he had done something wrong by not killing Ben-Hadad. Who else used this strategy with another king? Anybody remember? Telling him a story hoping the king on his own will realize he had done something wrong? Who did this happen to?
I didn't hear so good.
Who else, right?
Shoyal, he didn't.
No, I'm saying, which Navi came over to a king,
yeah,
telling him a story, hoping the king on his own will realize that he had done something wrong?
Back here.
The answer?
Go ahead.
That's an Navi.
Very good. With David HaMelech.
Yeah. When with the woman, right?
Right, exactly. Right. Exactly. Nasan Navi came over to David HaMelech, and he tells him, there was this man who had a little sheep, and then he grew it, he raised it from a little baby, and it was precious to him, and then this wealthy man comes along and takes it away. And yes, David HaMelech, you know, what do you say? What's the verdict on this wealthy man?
Guilty.
David HaMelech says, guilty, of course. Terrible thing to do. Nelson says, that's exactly what you had done to Uriah Chiti. And David noticed he himself realized that it was the wrong thing, and he did tshuva.
Right, if you look at killed.
Yeah, right. See, yeah, he uses some very harsh lashon. And in fact, the kapara of David HaMelech was very serious. If you look at in Tachanun, right, David describes how, you know, he's crying in his bed. And he's terrible Yisurim and troubles and trepidations. He lost four sons because of that. The Sanhedrin left him. He got tzaras. He got leprosy. He suffered a lot just to atone for this one sin.
Uriah Chiti was married to Malchus.
That was afterwards. Yeah. First he took Bathsheba, and then he called Uriah Chiti. Then he called Uriah Chiti and he says, I want you to come go back home. And then, why? Because he's trying to cover up the fact that he got the Bathsheba pregnant. David HaMelech got Bathsheba pregnant.
Uriah Chiti gave a get out tonight.
Right. Right. So, my friend, it turned out that she wasn't married at the time. But David HaMelech was the one who sent him to the front lines. Right?
Afterwards,
yeah, after the fact.
Before the fact, when he went out originally, he gave a get out tonight.
True.
So he gave a get out tonight.
You're right, technically speaking, David HaMelech did nothing wrong.
He was single.
Yeah. Now, just as a side point, it's
so
interesting.
Such a big, a terrible einish, if Ki'ilu, she was single at the time,
because the way he went about it wasn't a good kosher way.
He got his eye out for her.
What if he would have came back alive? Then what? What would David HaMelech do? Turns out that he slept with a married woman. What do you do then? Happens to be, he died, yeah. So at the end, it turned out okay.
Is the get chal at the time of the giving, or at the time...
That's machlokes, right. Machlokes in the Gemara, exactly, it works.
I always got what if. What if? I got something else to ask you about the passion afterwards.
That's what Jews all the time, what if.
Says, what if. So if I study, so what's it going to be a what if?
You can ask any question, mm-hmm. as long as it doesn't start with what if.
Other than the fools and everything else, telling the Jewish people what's going to happen to them. And it happens to them.
So what?
Why? I mean, why does it have to happen to them? You know, like I said before, the only time that Mashiach is going to come is when Hashem himself says it's the time.
Right.
He says it's the time they should leave Egypt. They didn't come out because they were terrific and everything else. That was the time, so he made it happen. Why is it taking them so long to have the time and all these people are dying and getting killed?
Yeah, call them up.
I asked you that before, but that's, it just seems that's the way it's going to be. It's not, is it like he, when the Chumash, when he's, when Moses is telling him what's going to happen, it doesn't say, if you don't do it, this is going to happen. It says, this is going to happen, and you are going to do it. That's what he says. Not if you follow the rules and do everything right, it'll be okay. But if not, he doesn't say if not. He's saying there's going to be a time when they are going to do bad stuff. Go with the other thing. when they went to Egypt, why did they go to Egypt in the first place? Hashem sent them there for the reason, for whatever, and you know, everything else. And then he was talking to Avram. Avram is doing all of the pots of the behemoths. When he was doing Abram wants to know what's going to happen if something, you know, are you going to forget about it? You should know. He doesn't answer them if they're okay. He says, you should know that this is going to happen. It just seems it's inevitable.
Right. Well, the way I understand it is that there's two alternative worlds, meaning there's, in one world, yes, this will happen, for sure. But in another world, it's not going to happen. Like we find, there's two different prophecies describing the coming of Mashiach. There's the Navi Zechariah, and which describes Mashiach coming, Ani v'roichev al-chamar, coming as a poor man riding on a donkey. Then you have another nevuah of Yirmiyah, where Mashiach is described coming on eagle's wings, right, in a very, very magnificent, beautiful way, right? So which one is right, right? It's describing a reality, right? Two very, very different realities. So we're talking about two alternative worlds. In one world, yes, this will happen. People will die, they'll be punished, it'll be terrible. In another world, it's not going to happen. I mean, if we do tshuva, then Mashiach will come early, and we won't have to suffer so much. It's two alternate worlds.
It seems in the Haftorahs, they're saying, and Hashem is going to come and make everybody believe in Him.
Right.
It says that there. It doesn't say maybe.
Right. In that world, yes, it's for sure going to happen. Describing a reality, yes, a reality that will happen. In that world, right? It's two different worlds.
Yeah, but that's the world we live in.
Okay. Might not be the world.
There's an alternate world that where it didn't happen.
You mentioned David. All right, I gotta say here.
Okay, next. Let's go.
What do you mean?
is two.
I'm sorry.
Right, they're both, it's both supposed to come.
I don't hear.
They're both going to come.
I can't hear a word you're saying.
Yeah,
I can hardly hear you. That's why I sit right next over here. I don't hear good.
She's not coming. You can't find a white donkey. Can't find it. It's lost.
So. Take a donkey, spray paint it white, and then, you know, finish. It's not that complicated.
Make him in a white Cadillac. I don't know.
If that's what's holding him back, we'll work it out.
That's not the problem.
Yeah. Okay, let's see further. So this man comes over to him, and he hits him up, and he hits him, gives him a good beating. He goes over to Achav, the king. He waits until he travels on the road. And the prophet goes out and he covers his face with dirt somehow so Ach won't recognize him as the Navi. As the king is passing, he screams to the king, Ach, and he tells him this whole tale. I went out to war. And this man comes over and he gives me someone to guard. And he tells me, listen, you better guard this man. If you don't guard him well, if he manages to escape, manages to run away, you're going to be held accountable. Either you're going to have to die instead of him, or you're going to have to pay me a huge sum of money. You're in charge. Don't mess up. Right? I went along doing my business. And I turn around. He's gone. He escaped.
He's gone away.
So the king turns to him and he says, ah, you deserve the punishment that you got. You didn't watch him. You didn't guard him. He managed to escape. You're held responsible. That's what he says. So what does the Navi do? Vayimar vayasar sa'afr mal enav. He takes and washes away all the dirt on his face. Vayakar oysam elach Yisrael ki manavimu. Then at that point, the Achav recognizes him, that he is in fact one of the Navim. So he turns to him and he says, oh, this is exactly what you, Achav, did when Hashem told you to make sure to kill Ben-Hadad. Right? Just like the story that I told you, that I didn't guard this person, the made-up story, and I was punished for not watching him, and he escaped. So too, you Achav, the king of Israel, let Ben-Hadad escape. And you did not kill him. Therefore, you will now be held accountable. Your life will go instead of his life. Your people instead of his people. V'yelech melech Yisrael al beisoy, sar v'zoif, v'yovei shalim reino. He goes home, Achav goes home in a foul mood, he's very upset because he just heard what the Navi told him, and he was right. He was right, the Navi was right. And he goes home to Shomer and he's very, very unhappy.
So Taka, why didn't he kill him?
The Navi?
Why didn't Achav kill Ben-Hadad?
Why didn't Achav kill Ben-Hadad? Because he managed to defeat him, he already won the war. Why go and kill him? Yeah. What am I going to possibly gain from it?
So I heard a pshat by Agag. I don't know if I told you this.
Yeah.
He had a chance to kill him.
The idea was to put him in chains and to go all over Eretz Yisrael parading him through the streets, showing having ki'ilu, a souvenir from the victory of war. here I have the leader of this of the enemy
mm-hmm.
in chains.
Why didn't they kill Aaron? You shake hands with them and you think things are going to be better.
Who's that? I never thought that.
It keeps on repeating itself throughout history. That's my own opinion.
Over here, though, he did something even worse. Because he said, Achihu, he's my brother. I'm not going to do anything to him, right? His men, Ben Adad's men, came over to Achav, and he said, no, please don't kill him. So Achav says, no, don't worry, I'm not going to kill him. He's my brother, I'm not going to do anything. Chas v'shalom, right? It sounds like almost he said it by mistake. He didn't really mean to say it, but it just kind of came out. And once he said it, he couldn't turn back. So obviously, he couldn't kill him. He couldn't even parade him in the land of Israel. He couldn't show him off as spoils of war, as a war prisoner. He had to treat him as a brother. And that was obviously way worse. It's one thing if you don't kill him, but you treat him like a brother. At least make him into a slave. Humiliate him. Right? Parade him, like you said. Do something. To treat him like your brother.
Shoel did the same thing.
Well, you didn't treat Agag like
nice
his brother.
He's a nice looking girl. No. Have a baby with her.
Well, I don't think, doesn't sound like Shaul knew about that. Yeah, obviously Shaul didn't know about that. Yeah, so anyway, so this is what happened to Achav. Now, just before we go on to the next parak, just an interesting matter, I saw about David Melech, since we mentioned David Melech. It says the reason why this whole story happened to David Melech was when he first fought Goliath, what did he do? He takes a rock into a slingshot, shoots the rock, and it hits Goliath in the forehead. Right? There's a medrash that talks about the conversation that was going on between the rock and the metal on the shield of Goliath. The rock turns to the metal and says, "Let me in. I want to hit Goliath in the head and knock him over." So the metal says, "What do you mean? I'm not gonna just let you go. I'm not gonna let that happen. So the rock says, "Okay, you know what? If you let me in, if you let me go through, penetrate through you, the metal, then I will give you the mitzvah of Bris Milah. I'll go ahead and let you, from now on, the Jews will perform the mitzvah of Bris Milah with metal instead of a rock." We find by Tzipora that she used a rock on Moshe. Now on, they're going to use metal. So, the metal said, okay, good deal, and he let him in. That's a whole different story, what that means. I'm talking about spiritual forces over there. But in any case, so Goliath falls. He falls forward. Typically, when you get hit, you fall backwards. But he falls forward, so David HaMelech won't have to walk too much. So David HaMelech runs over. He wants to take the sword out of the sheath of on Goliath to cut off his head. He's got one problem. The sword is locked in place. So he turns to the Nisi Kalim, the person who was in charge of Goliath, the weapons of Goliath. And he tells him, "Give me the key." So the guy says, "Okay, what's in it for me? Well, what am I to gain?" So David HaMelech turns to him and he says, "If you give me the key, then in turn I will allow you to convert to the Jewish people. And you can marry any girl you want." That's what he tells him. So the guy says, "Deal. Sounds pretty sweet to me." Takes out the key, hands it over to David HaMelech. And David HaMelech takes out he opens the sheath, takes out the sword, and chops off the head of Goliath. This man, right, the person who was in charge of the weapons, who gave David the key, ends up converting. And who does he marry?
Bathsheba.
He marries Bathsheba. Who is the husband of Bathsheba? Uriah HaChiti. He wasn't Jewish. He was a Chiti. Right? He converted. And then he married Bathsheba. Why did he marry Bathsheba? Really, Bathsheba was meant to be the wife of David HaMelech. The Gemara says, Ruya HaYisa Bathsheba, LaDavid HaMelech, Mishesh Yisamei Bereshis. Bathsheba was fit for King David from the days of creation. But because David HaMelech so to speak, went to this man and he offered him all the women of the Jewish people, right? Said, oh yeah, you can convert and marry anyone you want, right? Just like, so to speak, like treating them as, you know, very lightly. So Hashem says, ah, that's how you treat my Jewish girls. Then I'm going to let him marry your wife, the woman that you're supposed to marry, not going to be married to that man. Because you said that. And that's why David HaMelech, he was going to end up with Bathsheba anyway. But because he said that in the wrong way, that's why he was punished, and this whole story happened to him this way. Okay, we have a few more minutes, let's go further. Pasuk Chof Aleph. Pasuk Chof Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. V'yachar dvarim ha'ele, kerem ho'yel ha'novis ha'yisraeli, asher b'Yisrael, etzal heichal achav melech shemrei. So now, we're talking about the very famous story of the vineyard of Novice, who lived in Israel. Now, if you notice, the Pasuk is pointing out a lot of very trivial details. First of all, the fact that he's living in Israel, and the fact that he's living next to the king. Next to the king? Achav Melech Shomrei, who is the king of Shomrei, Samaria. Why mention all these trivial details? So the Malbim explains that typically a king is allowed to take anything he sees fit for his own, to promote, you know, his own personal possessions, the palace, or to support his army, whatever it is, anything that will benefit the general taxpayer of the Jewish people.
I mean, it's true in most civil law. It's called eminent domain.
Eminent domain. It's in American law as well?
Yep.
A person can just walk into anybody's house and say, oh, I need this house for...
They have to be paid something.
Right. Okay. So it's a good thing Trump didn't walk over to 52 Oakland Street and kick me out. It wouldn't be fun. Okay. Now, So the Pasuk is pointing out that Achav, where did he live? He was the king where? In Shomrei. Meaning, he's allowed to take anything in the city of Shomrei to promote his palace. However, the vineyard of Novice was where? In Israel. The neighboring city. Not in Shomrei. So therefore, that's why the Pasuk is pointing out that because it wasn't in the capital of Shomrei, he was therefore not allowed to go ahead and take it just because he sees fit, because it's not in the same city.
Right.
So what happens? V'idavar Achav el Novice leimar. Achav turns to Novice, he comes over to him very nicely, he offers him a good deal, and he says, T'nolius karmacho v'hili legani yorek. Why don't you give me your vineyard? I'll make it into a nice garden, I could walk around. Typically, kings had their own gardens where they would walk around just to relax. I don't know if you remember, but the king, King Charles, I think it was, Prince Charles, when he was going to marry Princess Diana, he was apparently one day going to take a walk into his garden, and Diana wanted to walk in there with him, you know, to accompany your husband-to-be. He said, no, this is only just for me, only the prince. It's my personal, private garden. No one else is allowed in there. And apparently it caused this big fuss. It was a big thing. But apparently, every king had a private garden where no one else was allowed to go. So now, Achav is deciding to build up his garden, his own private garden. Either he wanted to extend it, or he wanted to build another garden. Set up another garden. So he liked the vineyard of Novice, and he says, "Listen, why don't you give it to me?" Why? What did he tell him? Kukari v'etzal beisi. It's very close to my house. Convenient. V'etna l'cha tacht of kerem tovim. He says, "Don't worry, I'll take good care of you. I'll give you a vineyard that's even better than that one." If not, if you don't want a better vineyard, I'll give you good money. I'll pay above market price, whatever it is. and you'll be well taken care of. So now the only reason that Achav gave Nabais that he wants his vineyard is what? That it's close to my house. It's convenient. Now, the way Achav did it was typically, not only did he build, did he set up his own, did he plant his own private garden, but the way he did it was, is he set up his own personal avodah zarah, his own personal idols in his garden, where he can worship idols, right over there. And apparently it was public knowledge, everyone knew about this, and including Nabais. And so Nabais, when he heard about this, he's like, what do you mean? I'm not going to let my vineyard become a base of avodah zarah, a house for worshiping idols. It's terrible. I'm not going to do that. So Pasuk Gimel, Ve'emar Nabais al Achav, Chalil Ali, Mashem, Mititi es nachas avoy sa'ilecha. He tells him, Chas v'shalom, I would never do that, to give my heritage that I got from my fathers, from my it was in the family, this vineyard was in the family for many years. I can't give it to you. You're going to turn into a base of avodah zarah. Now, it's interesting that he points out, now it could be just, you know, a reason, why don't I want to give it to you, because it's been in the family for so many years. Okay, who cares? It's been in the family. Okay, so get good money for it. Sell it. Just because it's been in the family. So the Malbim explains that what Nabais was doing over there, he didn't just tell him no. He actually went over to Achav and he told him off for worshipping avodah zarah. He's telling him, just like this vineyard is in the heritage from my fathers, you, Achav, are going against the heritage of your fathers by worshipping idols. How could he do that? So he's mamash giving him stark musar for worshipping idols. Telling him off. Right? And he's telling him, how could you go ahead and, you know, worship idols? You're not even gaining anything out of it. You're not getting any money. Right? And he says that, you know, this vineyard is only physical, right? But you, right, you're leaving your spiritual and your long life heritage from your fathers, which is obviously way, way more important. Yeah, so he gives Achav a whole Musar Shmuz. And then Pasuk Dalet continues, Vayavah Achav al Beis like Sar V'Zoif. Achav is not having a good day. He goes home. He's very upset. And what is he upset about? Al Adavar Shadimar Elav Nabais HaYisraeli. He's not upset about the vineyard. Okay, it's, you know, who cares about the vineyard? He'll find another vineyard. He's upset because Nabais told him off. Apparently he had some level of regret, and he realized he was doing something wrong. And Nabais really drove it home. And when he heard that, it really spoke to him, and he was very upset about it. Right? And also the fact that he wouldn't give him the vineyard. He goes to his room, right? It's like a little kid, right? What does a little kid do? He goes to his room. I don't want to eat. Don't talk to me. He turns his face from everybody. And he doesn't want dinner. But Tovei Elav Yizebel Ishtoi. Yizebel, his wife, comes over to him. But Tadabar Elav Masa Rucha Chasara Ve'incha Oichel Lachem. She starts talking to him. What's going on? Why are you so sad? Why are you upset? Why don't you have dinner? So now, Achav is facing a problem. He can't tell her the truth. He can't tell her the real reason why he's upset. That, what's the real reason? The fact that Nabais told him off for worshipping idols. Why can't he tell her? Because his wife is his partner in crime. She's the one, also the one who, she had her whole different set of Nevi Asherah, of prophets for idols. So he couldn't do anything. He couldn't tell her the truth. So what did he say? Pasuk Vav, Vaydaber Aleha Ki Yadaber El Nabais HaYisraeli Vaymaloi Tnoli Et Karmacha Bechesef Oy Mechafetat Etn Lecha Ketem Kerem Tachtov Vayomer Elo Etn Lecha Es Karmi. So he has to cover up. He has to tell her, you know why I'm upset? I'm upset because Nabais refused to give me his vineyard. Not because he told me off. That he can't tell her. he's came up with a cover story why he's really upset. So Yizebel turns to Achav and she says, my dear husband, don't you worry. Sit back, enjoy a good fatty dinner. I'm going to take care of everything for you. Consider it handled. So the Malcolm explains, when she tells him, ato tasa malucha, when you establish your kingship, that's typically when you set the rules. Set the rules and say, okay, this is what the king can do, this is what the king cannot do. Right? There's a set of rules to everything. You can't just do whatever you want. So she's saying, now you should establish your kingship. Meaning, right now, it's too late to go ahead and change the rules. Because if you change the rules and say, oh, you know, from now on, the king can go ahead and take anyone's vineyard, what's going to happen? Everyone's going to rebel. They're going to be upset, rebelling against the king. It'll be a terrible disaster, a political coup, who knows what's going to happen. So, Yizebel says, I'm going to have to go ahead and, in a very crafty, discreet way, go ahead and get a hold of the vineyard of Nevis. It's gonna be a very, very discreet way behind the scenes. Okay, so we'll stop here for now, and next week we'll see what happens with this, how she goes about it.